Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Parents Take Note. NPR brings you a new series on how to raise a human. You can follow the hashtag on social media or log in to npr.org to hear stories on everything from the language of babies to resilience to fifth graders to how the United States government first began to get involved in the health and well-being of children. In one of the upcoming stories, NPR's Micheline Duclef travels to rural Mexico to discover a group of Mayan children with extraordinary abilities to pay attention. SDPB is bringing How to Raise a Human home to South Dakota. Today, we welcome our guest, Shane Hamilton. He's an integrated health therapist at Sanford. Shane, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Give me an idea of what an integrated health therapist is at first. Why that word integrated?
So the integrated aspect of it is I'm a behavioral health provider that's integrated right within the pediatric primary care clinic. So I work directly with the pediatricians, and we have others that do my role that are with family med providers as well.
Okay, so you're physically located there, and then you work with other people in a collaborative fashion as well. Do I understand it correctly?
Yeah, okay. A lot of that too. You know, a patient can come in and see the physician, and you know they're talking about a cough, and all of a sudden there's more of a behavioral thing, or we've got some attention concerns going on. They can bring me in, and I can be consulted immediately and meet with the the patient and the families and kind of figure out what we can do to help out.
All right. I think we're going to talk more about this program at Sanford in other ways in our next segment. But I'm hoping we can start out with you. And let's start with, I'm sure you deal with all kinds of fascinating things, so we could go anywhere with this. But I want to start with this idea of attention and focus and distraction or attention deficit disorder. There are so many things as a parent that parents are wondering about in technological age, as kids go to school. Do you see parents asking about this and coming in and saying to you, like, you know, my kid can't focus on one thing, or having questions about what's developmentally appropriate?
Yeah, we see a lot of that coming in, and the spectrum of it really varies. You have the parent coming in with their 2-3-year-old of just simply saying, hey, we're trying to work on letters, but we can't get them to sit down and to work on those different things, all the way ranging up to the concern for the ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder of, is that a true biological issue that's going on with my child? And if so, you know, what do we need to do to be helping out? A lot of it, on a weekly basis, I have that conversation probably a good 5-10 times.
Really? Okay, so let's start with some of the basics as far as, you know, hey, I want to read my kid a book, but he just doesn't want to sit. What's developmentally appropriate? When should a child be able to focus on a task for an extended period of time?
You know, we look at it, it's something we want to introduce to them at a young age, even, you know, through infancy and early childhood, of kind of really reading to them, spending that time. They may not necessarily want to do those different things, but that's where we try to find ways to, you know, tailor to their interests and what they're like in there of kind of, you know, reading them the books and different types of, you're not going to sit down and read a chapter book or even a longer book with a 2-year-old. You do one that's kind of fun and you add some kind of flair into it as you're reading it. And so kind of working with them to adapt. And we want to set that expectation that, yes, we're going to be able to sit here and attend to this for an appropriate amount of time. You know, kind of a rule of thumb that I'll give parents is anywhere from, you know, you take their age and give it for every year old, 2 to 4 minutes for it. So if you have a 3-year-old, you're maybe going to get anywhere from 6 to 12 minutes out of them during that time and kind of having that expectations and kind of making it so that within, you know, this is a fun thing. We're going to work on this for a little bit and not necessarily just pushing them all the way to that 12 minutes. If, you know, we get done with it at 6 minutes, they're doing great. Okay, fantastic. Now let's have a little bit of a break and we can kind of move on from it.
Does the child know that there's a time limit? I mean, you're not setting a timer at this point. You're just in the moment with your kiddo, right?
Yeah, very much so. You don't have to. There's some times where maybe we will. You got a kindergarten, okay, we've got to work on doing our letters here a little bit. Let's set this timer. Because sometimes kids can kind of adhere well to that idea of there's a timer. They kind of know it. They like it. For us adults, it seems to just make time drag on. But kids like it a little bit more. But is it something to where we need to set a timer for everything we do? Absolutely not. I think it's kind of good for us as parents just to kind of have that in the back of our mind and knowing those expectations and what's appropriate for them.
When my child was little, one of the things I had to teach myself to do was to not interrupt her At certain, I mean, obviously not never, but there were times where she would sort of get involved in playing with, you know, some blocks or something. I would be sitting nearby and I would just, I remember just freezing and like saying, okay, she's totally in this space right now. I'm not going to interrupt her by getting up and moving around. How important is just when the child is, you know, looking at a book by themselves or, you know, playing with a toy or an object that they've found, for parents to just sort of back off and let that attention develop?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very much important. I think kind of sometimes our natural instincts to kind of want to come and say, hey, oh, you're doing a great job there looking at those
right.
blocks you're building with the blocks, but then that just pulls them away from it. And so it's kind of us, you know, managing our impulses there of just letting them play. Hey, this is a great thing of, you know, whether they'll go on and play with it for 5 minutes or 20 minutes. You get some kids where they'll sit there and they'll play with their Legos for a half an hour without any issues. And that's
right.
okay. That's helping them kind of build that of kind of creating that foundation. So then when they get to be a little bit older, get into the school age, they've got some of that, you know, ability to do so.
How old do they start developing? And I can't remember, is it called like object permanence or, you know, that moment where they realize if they can't see her, she still does exist. Like what age does that start coming at two kids? Do you know?
Yeah. Boy, you're making me.
Yeah, I know. I'm
back
going
my
back.
Brain there.
I know, me too.
Yeah, you know, and it kind of varies a little bit, obviously, for each child. But you know, kind of, we expect to see some of that around that 2 year age range.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, and a lot of times, then they'll get so engrossed in that, and then they'll be okay, and then all of a sudden they look around and oh, mom's not there, and then that's when you get some of those cries that come about there. But then all of a sudden, okay, oh, yep, mom is there and attends to it, and then just helps redirect that, reassures them, yep, everything's okay, you were fine playing there, doing your thing, and mom was still there to provide that reassurance, or dad, whoever happens to be
right.
there.
Right. How important is this? Because now that, you know, my child is, you know, 17, and I see what she goes through in school, you know, with homework and the amount of attention she has to pay something and the duration she has to be able to stick with, you know, a test, for example. Like, how important is it to build the ability to pay attention and to focus? And how much can it really get in a kid's way if they are struggling in this area?
Yeah, I think it's definitely important for them to be able to build that, because expectations nowadays are a lot different than back when I was in school. And I like to think it wasn't that many years ago, but it's really changed there to where kids, they have a lot of expectations. Even when on the younger ones with, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, they have that expectation. And we kind of look at it as being an executive functioning to where everybody has the ability to do so. We're not just born with it. So you have to kind of foster that and help them learn to develop those different skills that are going to benefit them for when they get later on in life. When doing that, and we see some kids to where maybe they do have a biological issue such as ADHD that's going on, whether it's the inattentive component or the hyperactive and impulsive, or maybe there's another learning disorder that's going on. And if they're struggling to do that, it creates a lot of issues for them, you know, not just for the child, but for parents and for teachers. And, you know, I think sometimes they'll express it through different ways. You'll see some of the different acting out behaviors, and we contribute it to really just non-compliance type stuff, but we have to ask ourselves, okay, is there something else that's contributing to it? You know, I like to think that for kids, there's always a reason for the behavior. It's just us as adults, we have to figure out what is that reason that it's going on, and then once we know it, then we can, you know, figure out how to best help them.
Yeah. How do we know when it's a problem, and what are the indications that we are looking at something that's biological, not just, you know, normal development?
Sure. You know, I get to ask that question a lot of, you know, a parent will come in with their 3-year-old and kind of say, boy, my kid's really energetic or can't, you know, tend to their letters like we're wanting them to. Do they have ADHD? Not necessarily. Really where we kind of start to assess that is at kindergarten age, so 5, 6 years old, to where we can look to see, because that's kind of where we kind of start to separate some of the just age-expected type behavior and distraction that's going on there. And we'll really kind of start to see it stand out as far as, you know, we give them a task to do and they can't do it. Or there's different things in school to where the teacher's able to kind of compare it to other peers that are, you know, they're able to sit and attend and do these different things and remember these kind of concepts, and this child's really not. And so I kind of look at it as really when we get into that school age frame to where if it's starting to impact them academically, that's when we know we need to look a little bit further into seeing if there's some more issues going on.
Yeah. Are there gender differences? I know that mothers of boys often will say, you know, he's a boy. He's not going to sit down. Is that an expectation difference, or is there really something going on there with the difference between boys and girls when they're little?
Yeah, you know, we do hear that a lot of that aspect of, you know, it's just a boy type of thing. I think kind of we tend to see boys as being a little bit more of the hyperactive, impulsive type things, and girls are a little bit quieter. And there's a lot of times where females are, you know, not diagnosed or misdiagnosed with kind of like an inattentive type component because it's, well, they're just a girl. They're being quiet, they're shy type of thing. You know, and so we do see that a little bit more predominantly in boys with it being diagnosed, but that doesn't mean that it's not occurring there with girls.
So we're looking at some cultural differences, no doubt.
Yeah, yep, you know, yeah. I think you could say that.
Yeah. How about nutrition and environment? So do we worry about, or do we think, how much do we think about the connection between what we're putting in front of our kids, you know, even our teenagers, and how they can focus? Does nutrition affect attention?
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of kind of different opinions out there with it. I think you need to make sure that a child's basic needs in regards to nutrition are being met. You know, we kind of say, okay, let's try to limit some of the different sugars and different things that are going on. If they're just eating candy all the time and drinking pop, that's going to amp them up there that little bit. But as far as, you know, other environmental type things, very much plays into it. I think one thing that often gets overlooked is sleep. And that aspect of, we get a lot of kids that are coming in, they're not sleeping well. And when kids aren't getting adequate sleep, then we tend to see it to where they'll have more of those energetic, distracted type behaviors. You have some coming in that really seem like they have an ADHD-based symptoms going on, but we get a good sleep hygiene down and those behaviors come down. You know, so doing some of those things. And then there's always that question of electronics, of, you know, how much time should my child be spending on electronics there? And the struggle is that in today's age, electronics are all over the place. You know, when kids go into school, they're using computers and iPads, and so we're not going to completely get away from those. You know, I think we kind of want to make sure that it's purposeful, and, you know, we're going to have those times of doing maybe a learning app on the iPad, but then having some of that other unplugged time to go out and play, go outside, do those different kind of free play-type activities there.
How does focus and attention issues surface? How do they surface with teenagers and adolescents?
So a lot of times we'll kind of start to see more of a dip in decline in the academics. You know, sometimes it's that aspect of, boy, we're really just not comprehending the math, and we're trying all these different things. We sit down, we work on homework for like 3 hours a night, but it's still not getting done, or we're doing, you know, poorly on the test. And so it kind of comes out in some of those different things. You don't see the quite as much with the hyperactive component that's there, because they've learned some of those self-regulation skills, but the ability to really fully attain that information becomes more prominent there.
Yeah, how do you work with kids, you know, maybe in that middle school, high school area, where maybe they're having to do, you know, more homework than they have before, and exactly what you said, they're, you know, they've got 3 hours and they're still not done because they're having a hard time just prioritizing and focusing. Is that just learned behavior? Where do you begin?
I think it's, you kind of have to do the wraparound approach of, yes, the child is going to need to do some different behavioral strategies to help them to, you know, be more attentive and things, but we also have to work with the parents and work with the school to make some of those different accommodations. And, you know, I think sometimes just helping the parents understand it's not a non-compliant based thing. This is legitimately a struggle there for your child to be able to pay attention and retain this information. You know, so sometimes it's that matter of, we're going to work on homework for, you know, 20 minutes, and then we're going to purposely take a break, give you, you know, 5-10 minutes to kind of reset. I kind of look at attention as being like a switch. So sometimes we're able to flip our switch on, and it stays on, and our attention's there for as long as we need it. Other people, their switch goes on, and then it's like it's greased, and it slowly starts to come down. So we have to recognize and kind of know, okay, when are we starting to lose some of that attention span, and then give that purposeful break to reset with it. And there's other strategies that they can do as far as understanding how that child learns best. You know, maybe it's, you know, writing different things out or using flashcards, or making sure, you know, we're very purposeful about writing in a planner. I think that's where a lot of the middle schoolers start to struggle, is they don't know what their homework assignments are. They're not writing them down. And so making sure that the teacher is checking in with them to, okay, did you get all of the assignments wrote down for the day? And then that goes home, and mom and dad make sure to look at it. So that way there's that communication, a little bit of accountability that's there as well.
All right. Any tips for those of us who are adults and need a good, healthy 5 to 10 minute break to reset our focus?
Yeah, and it's just kind of that self-awareness component. I think we all have a little bit of that intention at times, particularly it's, we're doing something that we don't necessarily want to be doing, but being mindful and setting my goal of, okay, I'm going to make sure that I do this and get my reports written or all these different things for work. And then once I hit that goal, then I'm going to give myself a break. And then when I'm working on everything, eliminating those distractions, putting the phone away, I'm not going to respond to any different emails or things like that.
Yeah. Shane Hamilton is an integrated health therapist at Sanford Health. Hey, thanks so much. This has been fascinating. We'd love to have you back sometime.
You bet. Thank you.
And you can follow npr.org for more conversations about how to raise a human. Just look for that hashtag.